hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and calling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You running down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side of me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a part of that key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you running down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down where life I'm fighting and fought that key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run it down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European Zombie Settler people.
It's a big job getting by with nine kids and a wife. But I've been working, man, dang near all my life. And I'll keep on working. Long as my two hands are fit to use.
Well, this is not quite the way we hope to have this. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I just want to make sure we've got that song squelched. Lots more news and views for our people, and of course those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Just finished a two-hour and very interesting show, and this was Radio Free South Africa with Karen Smith. And Shark van der Merwe from South Africa, and we had a far-ranging discussion on conditions of whites in South Africa, the immigration invasion of the First World on the battle of free speech. So a far-ranging discussion, and hope to be doing that show again in the near future. So much to report tonight. I'll hear it. Wisconsin Muslim migrant mother of seven plotted to poison the reservoir with ricin. I know she's recruited in 2015. Now, ricin is a deadly chemical that leads to the complete breakdown of the nervous system. It was used with catastrophic effects by a weird sect in Japan led by somebody my Japanese friends call the frog man, Aun, a short, stubby, grotesque man who has a cult following. Anyway, this woman in Wisconsin plotted to put ricin into the water supply of the municipality under the directions of ISIS. Anyone around her in Wisconsin who might have raised suspicions would have been derided as a racist, big or bigger than an Islamophobe. That's the problem with this whole Islamophobia nonsense, is that the very healthy concern that people might have about radical Islam is poo-pooed as being Islamophobia or somehow bad. Wisconsin mother of seven agrees to plead guilty to trying to plot an ISIS terror attack by instructing recruits on how to build bombs and poison reservoirs. She did this on Facebook accounts. A Wisconsin mother has of seven, but boy, she's been busy, hasn't she, in addition to terrorism, of seven, has agreed to plead guilty to trying to plan ISIS terror attacks. Wahiba Issa Dais, 45, has agreed to plead guilty to one count of providing material to support a terrorist group in exchange for another count being dropped. The Israeli native, who calls herself a housewife on a visa application to the U.S., plotted attacks such as poisoning a reservoir with ricin. She was arrested last year after trying to use social media to recruit other terrorists. She hacked other people's account and also operated her own. Prosecutors say she tried to explain to them how to use explosives and poisons. Dias was born in Jerusalem but came to the U.S. with her husband in 1992. She settled in Chicago but has since moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. On Monday, as the plea deal was announced, it was revealed that she is in fact a mother of seven. In her attempts to unleash terror on the group's behalf, she discussed bombing street festivals as well as poisoning government water supplies. In one Facebook post in February, she pledged her support for ISIS, according to the FBI report. When I publish any statement, I completely believe in it. I was and I continue to be on the doctrine of the Islamic State, the post read. In one online exchange, Dias told a potential recruit to act like an ordinary person and that complete secrecy was needed to carry out attacks. An FBI confidential informant told investigators that Dias is unemployed and that her Islamic husband paid the bills. The informant also reported that Dias was constantly on social media promoting ISIS, and that her accounts were frequently shut down for that reason. Interesting, isn't it? And these people walk among us. Here's the latest attack on free speech. And last night I dealt with Facebook having shut down 23 accounts having to do with the Minorte Party, which is the League of the North Party, in Italy, in the run-up to the elections for the European Union Parliament, and these elections will be held in 2 weeks' time. Suddenly, 23, I guess I'd say, Facebook pages that have had over 2.5 million followers are suddenly shut down. For the usual vague, nonsensical reasons, a clear interference in the electoral process. There's much groaning and complaining and innuendo that Russia is seeking to meddle in the elections in Europe and seeking to meddle in the elections in the United States. This is a bit of a laugh. When it's outfits like the Facebook, they're doing their best to shut down discussion of people by people on the patriotic side of the spectrum. It's also highly significant in the United States. We had this discussion the other day at after Jan Lamprecht's meeping in Penticton, British Columbia, and somebody in the group just said, "I mean, well, what's all this stuff about Russia? The country with real influence in election after election and basically buys up the subservience of most of the members of the U.S. Congress is Israel, the state of Israel. Don't worry about Russia." One of the people doing a great deal of good work in terms of videos, particularly on the dicey topic of the so-called Holocaust, Jim Rizzoli and Diane King. Now, Jim Rizzoli has been so effectively banned. Yeah, that's right, in the land of the free and the home of the brave. That's right, from cable videos in and around Framingham, Massachusetts, which is just west of Boston. But basically, Diane has of late been the woman fronting some of their work. She has a number of TV shows. Well, and this is just sort of hot off the press. The May 19th cable show, Connect the Dots, that's the name of her program, has apparently been censored by Ashlands, that's the town's WACA-TV. The long and short of it is that after 3 years of generally amicable relationship with Executive Director Barbara Chisholm of Ashland, Massachusetts, WACA-TV, there was a problem. It was clear my video series Connect the Dots promoted controversial political views, and I even presented a video for Maine dealing with racial awareness with the black conservative black point of view. It played once on April 22nd, 23rd, 2019 at midnight, safe harbor time slot. And that was the last time any of my shows have been aired. This is Diane King's statement. Since then, I've attempted on numerous occasions to contact Ms. Chisholm via our customary and formerly successful methods, email and phone calls, but these have been met by silence and disregarding my concerns. I even went down to her office on May 7th, and she refused to see me, feigning a conference call. There was no overture to me to return, that she would get back to me, nor was there any kindness extended toward me as toward a business associate or even as a friend. The sudden and definite freeze silence reinforced my suspicion of censorship because of a now political bias against me. She never informed me that my videos were no longer being aired. She just stopped airing them. I must infer, therefore, that because of the timing of my broadcast cessation, that my last video, Racial Awareness, sparked the censorship. This was followed by a special WACA-TV show about freedom of speech, with a flurry of guests to participate and endorse freedom of speech on WACA-TV. Isn't the hypocrisy, I would almost say delightful, but it's not delightful. It's breathtaking in its lack of self-awareness. It appears that preaching and practicing of free speech at Ashland's WACA-TV are completely different and selective, and thus non-existent. For you see, freedom of speech for all, or it is not freedom of speech at all, and I have been denied mine. And that's from Diane King. Well, what has to be done is, in every case, pushback. Now, I urge you, if you live in that area, speak up and get involved. Silence is never golden. Oh yeah, another person punished for their views. It doesn't take long. BBC host fired over racist picture. A BBC radio broadcaster was fired Thursday for using a picture of a chimpanzee in a tweet about the royal baby born to Meghan Markle, the Duchess of Sussex, and Prince Harry. They had their kid last week. Danny Baker, who had a weekly show on BBC Radio 5 Live, tweeted Thursday he has been fired after posing an image of a couple holding hands with a chimpanzee dressed in clothes and the caption, "Royal baby leaves hospital." The tweet was seen as a racist reference to the baby's heritage. His grandmother, Doria Ragland, is a Negress. Well, they say African-American, but she's never in Africa. It's nothing to do with Africa. Isn't it amazing? One slight reference to race, and you're gone. You've lost your job. There is no proportionality. This is fanaticism of the worst type. And it's not a matter of protecting the dignity of the royals. It's also obvious that this royal family is a disgrace. In fact, a number of us were talking about this over the past day or two. How absolutely broken and pathetic. Here is the royal family to whom we tend to look up and to in the although royals have always at times had their foibles and there'd be weak people and so on, there was a certain standard set. Here we've got Prince Harry marrying a mulatto who was, I think, born a Catholic, became a Jewess, is a radical supporter of LGBTQ. The child, the little boy, is going to be raised as a non-gendered person, whatever that means. So he'll be confused about his sex. He'll be confused about his race. What a fate to inflict on anybody. But the outrage is that for this tweet and this picture, whether it's polite or not, that's a different matter. The penalty is nuclearized, is to be nuked. Got fired. He's gone. Mightn't that have been an opportunity for a debate for people to write in and say, your tweet was rude, it was mistaken, you ought to apologize, or something like that. But oh no, he's gone. This is what has happened to freedom of speech in Britain. We live in a permanent present, and I guess that's human nature. But when you develop any sort of perspective, you really see things that shock you. I wouldn't have believed 50 years ago, when I was a young man, that in an area that cherished individual liberty, almost as much as the United States, Britain, that had precious liberties, like the right to be presumed innocent, the right to remain silent, when you're questioned by police, would be so eroded. And freedom of speech, just a distant memory. It's a nice slogan, it has no reality on the ground. And this is the sort of thing that has to be fought, or not, if the British people are prepared if they're prepared to go along with that, then they will lose further freedoms. This is what this is the latest assault on freedom of speech in Britain. One of the things that really has intrigued me over the years is the efforts, at least in the province of Quebec, to do something to curb the more egregious forms of multiculturalism. And what the province of Quebec has tried to do is to bring in a piece of legislation that would ban the use of religious headgear in these would be hijabs or turbans or skull caps or kippahs, I think they're sometimes called, for a limited number of public servants, for instance, teachers, judges, policemen. In other words, so the public can see that service is provided on an objective basis, that the person providing that service is in fact an objective civil servant, not the spear carrier for one religion or another. And this bill is called Bill 21. It's currently being studied by a committee of the Quebec Legislature. Well, some of the groups that are opposing it, of course, the usual suspects of various Jewish lobby groups, multi-culti groups. While the government gave primetime slots on Tuesday to the bill's boosters, detractors were scheduled for later in the day. The Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs said in its brief that the provincial government was poised to suspend fundamental rights without demonstrating that it was responding to any real and urgent social need. Well, you don't necessarily have a right to dress up as to play dress up. Practice your religion, yes. Dress in a way that might be offensive to the majority, perhaps no. The group had said it feared the law would lead to abuses and arbitrary decisions. The Quebec Human Rights Commission said in its brief that the province's continuous debate about religious minorities over the past decade has worsened the social climate. The commission said the ban threatened to discriminate against minorities who are, in some cases, already victims of prejudice and exclusion. Oh, boo-hoo-hoo. You know, if you're Muslim and you choose to dress up in medieval garb, you're inviting notice. Now, you know, if you don't want to be noticed or you don't want to be noticed negatively, then dress like the rest. Charles Taylor, who co-authored the report that began Quebec's long and roiling debate on the place of religion in the public sphere, said the proposed law could alienate religious minorities and encourage anti-Muslim sentiment, which he called dangerous. Anti-Muslim sentiment. Well, perhaps if Muslims behaved themselves, there mightn't be anti-Muslim sentiment, assuming there is that. And a law that would control people's behavior, at least in public, as it regards the public. How is that going to create anti-Muslim feeling? In fact, au contraire, as they say, it might address one of the major issues. Anyway, the minister in charge is Simon Jolin Barrette. Now, what's his title? His title is Minister of Immigration, Diversity, and Inclusiveness. My God, every slogan, politically correct slogan in the book, diversity and inclusiveness, it really makes you want to vomit. because, of course, once you understand the lingo, you begin to find out that diversity and inclusion don't mean us. When a workplace, for instance, embraces diversity, what it means is it doesn't want more white people, particularly it doesn't want more white males. doesn't mean inclusion and diversity particularly don't mean you. And that's something that's really important to understand. Here's an article I really agree with. The man on shark fins is long overdue and just common sense. This is an outrage that's at least partly a result of our having a large Chinese population certainly in much of North America. And a shark struggles to free herself from the rope, hauling her onto the ship. Fishermen quickly grab her and hack off her fins, each side, and then the top, maybe even her tail. She's still alive, and they throw her back into the ocean, where she can no longer swim. So she sinks deeper and deeper, dying a slow death. It would be really the equivalent, I guess, of having your arms and legs cut off. You have no mobility. This is shark finning in the East, and Canada supports it. That's in Asia. Outside of Eastern Asia, Canada is the largest importer of shark fins, long considered a delicacy in some Eastern cultures. Chinese culture. They always try to soften it. Shark fin is primarily used in soup. The shark fin trade has come under harsh criticism in recent decades, with animal and environmental advocates deeming it cruel, unethical, and ecologically damaging. While the actual practice of shark finning has been banned in Canada since 1994, we continue to fund the industry, which kills an estimated 70 to 100 million sharks globally each year. We do that through importation. However, we have the chance to change this. Bill S. 238, the Ban on Shark Fin Importation and Exportation Act, has one final step to go before becoming law in Canada, and advocates are urgently appealing to members of Parliament to pass it before the House of Commons adjourns for the summer. If it is not passed now, the bill will die, and so will many more sharks. The aptly named MP, Finn Donnelly, and I like to ride with a sense of humor, from the British Columbia riding of Port Moody, Coquitlam, is heading the bill. Quote, "There's a crisis in oceans around the world with the rapid decline of sharks being killed for their fins," he said in a statement. Since 2011, five private members' bills have been introduced that would ban the trade of shark fins. In that time, nearly 1 billion sharks have been butchered and killed for their fins. That's all, their fins alone. The rest of them is simply heaved back into the ocean, or basically the still living body. It's appallingly cruel. This goes on to say, imagine if 100 million bears had been removed from our forests each year, or 100 million lions disappeared from the African continent annually. Good point. In addition to the cruel nature of shark finning, the killing of such a vast number of one species can wreak havoc on important ecosystems. The practice of shark finning has decimated the shark population and is unspeakably cruel, wasteful, and puts entire ocean ecosystems at risk of collapse, reads a statement from Humane Society International Canada, which has been campaigning for this ban for years. Sharks are apex predators, they say. They live at the top of the food chain, whose survival depends on other marine species and entire ocean ecosystems. Sharks grow slowly, mature late, and have relatively low rates of reproduction. This means that their populations have little resilience to harvests, and as a result, overfishing of sharks has now become a worldwide problem. In 2017, researchers at the University of Guelph tested the DNA of more than 100 samples of shark fin sold at stores and markets in Vancouver and discovered that 71% belong to the species, species considered to be at risk of extinction. With a bill to pass in Canada, animal rights lawyer Camille Labchuk says it would send a message that culture doesn't trump cruelty to animals. You know, maybe say it's Chinese culture to want to eat sharks. Well, not acceptable. And that has been a long time the part of the argument, and one that we must reject. And of course, there's another problem with multiculturalism. Multiculturalism encourages people to bring their failed or disgusting or failing cultures with them. Now, not everything in the culture, of course, but multiculturalism, by encouraging their culture, or the retention of these foreign cultures, very often incompatible cultures, we really just exacerbate the problem instead of telling newcomers firmly, look, you should get down on your knees to pray to God or the gods or whomever you worship and thank them that you're in Canada. And part of the deal is you're going to be doing, you're going to adapt to our culture. So, crime, it's okay in my culture. Yeah, well, that may be, and that may be one of the reasons you've come to my country, because your culture has failed. The article goes on to say, historically, cultural practices that may be extremely painful to animals have always won out. But I think we're starting to see that shift, says the animal rights lawyer Camille Labchuk. That cultural precedent is perhaps what has both hindered this bill and what makes it so appropriate and significant today. Although we consider our cultural diversity and freedoms to be of great importance in Canada, there is an ethical line we are less likely to cross. Our ban on shark finning in Canadian waters exemplifies just that. But to continue to finance the cruel shark fin trade elsewhere does not fit within modern Canadian standards for the treatment of animals. The support for the traditional dish seems to be waning even in China. In 2013, the Chinese government announced it would stop serving shark fin soups at official functions. In 2006, then NBA basketball player Yao Ming, who's Chinese, pledged to stop eating shark fin soup, later launching a campaign urging others to do the same. In Canada, a poll done by the Mustel Group in 2011 reportedly found that 77% of BC residents of Chinese ancestry were against the importation of shark fin into the country.
Let's hope that bill passes, but it's important that we keep the pressure on and recognize once again the problems with diversity. Diversity simply encourages this type of bad behavior. Instead of sending a clear message to foreigners that certain things are not acceptable, flatters them with a lot of nonsense that, it's okay, or, we'll try to accommodate you as best we can, and so on. This is an important thing, and all these little cultural struggles are really, I think, important. I urge people to get behind them. All of this is part of the pushback against what's being imposed on our beloved country by the monsters of multicult. Last week saw one of these disgraceful events in another anti-free speech event that occurred in Victoria, British Columbia, in a suburb of Victoria, a very tony area called Oak Bay. And once again, it was a bad day for freedom. We'll go over the details now. People who are critical of Soji, that's the gender-bending sex ed program in the schools of British Columbia, held a meeting. And the account is a short take on what happened last Thursday night in Oak Bay. The mob shouted down a guy who calls himself Jen Smith. Now, he's a transgendered person. It was a watershed moment in the contest to get out the information about just how crazy the transbenders are. And the article of this piece is Dr. Charles Lugosi, who was one of the, he was Bill Watcott's lawyer in the case before the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal last December, brought by transgendered person Ronan Auger, who was complaining that Bill Watcott's election leaflets from May 2017 had discriminated against him because he was transgendered, exposed him to hatred or contempt. All the leaflets did was urge people not to vote for him. Anyway, this is his lawyer, Dr. Charles Lugosi's account of this disgraceful meeting. Grassroots democracy is under attack in British Columbia, in direct violation of the rule of law. On May 2nd, 2019, in Oak Bay, B.C., Jen Smith was permitted by the local municipal council to give a public educational talk about the serious harm that can result from transgender surgery and from toxic drugs prescribed to teenagers who self-identify with a gender different from their sex assigned birth by DNA. Smith is an opponent of SOGI, that's the Sexual Orientation Gender Identity in BC Schools, which is supported by the LGBTQ community, the British Columbia Teachers Federation, and both the Liberal and New Democratic parties. LGBTQ activists and their allies now feel empowered to silence any opposition to SOGI as hate speech in the wake of the Watcott decision issued in 2019 by the BC Human Rights Tribunal, and to silence it by basically going out as a goon squad. The enemies of Jen Smith view him as a traitor to their cause to promote transgenderism and put pressure upon the Oak Bay Municipal Council to cancel the talk. To their credit, Oak Bay leaders accepted sound legal advice and ruled that the event was legitimate and lawful in accordance with the values of democracy and the rule of law and freedom of political expression, and permitted Smith to have his event. The opponents of Smith rebelled against this decision. People who wanted to hear Smith had to pass through a large, boisterous crowd of several hundred protesters that may have intimidated many who wanted to hear Smith. Various speakers from the LGBTQ community took the opportunity to support Soji. Dozens of Smith opponents took their rainbow flags, drums, and signs and packed the small meeting room upstairs, leaving no room for people who wanted to sit and listen to Smith. Someone blasted an air horn, others made very loud rattling noises, while another screamed vulgar profanities. Someone pulled a fire alarm that rang for a very long time. There was such a public disturbance that it was impossible to hear anything Smith had to say. An elderly man responded to chants of hate speech by the crowd while yelling back, "Free speech," but that lone soul was drowned out. The bully tactics of the opponents of Smith became increasingly aggressive. A few of them became very angry and appeared mentally disturbed. There was no violence. In any other context, the police would have arrested those protesters under the criminal code for causing a public disturbance, trespass, and mischief. In this case, by doing nothing to quiet the protesters, the police who were present appeared to have taken the side of the protesters, and yeah, I mean, it is politically correct policing. Throughout, Smith was composed. Although it was futile, with great civility, he attempted to give his presentation entitled, quote, "The Erosion of Freedom, How Transgender Politics in School and Society is Undermining Our Freedom and Harming Women and Children." The Oak Bay police refused to clear the room of hooligans so that the talk could proceed. An announcement was made by a leader of the protesters that the police informed him that the uniformed officers were coming, but that the meeting was to be shut down. This information resulted in jubilant cheers by the unruly crowd, happy that they had attained their goal to silence Smith. The police apparently chose not to do their duties under the Police Act, the common law, or the criminal code. Citing safety concerns as a sham pretext to do nothing, one police officer informed the event organizer that the event was forcibly closed by the police. To any objective observer, the police shamefully engaged in a gross dereliction of duty by permitting hooliganism to triumph. Yeah, the heckler's veto. Suppression of freedom of speech by hooliganism violates the rule of law. Without the enforcement of mutual respect and self-control to listen without interruption, the right of freedom of expression, and the corresponding right of willing listeners to hear the message, the very foundation of democracy is threatened. Civilized debate of opposing viewpoints can occur in a question period at the end of a presentation or in an organized debate between opponents. Good manners, social stability, and enforcement of the rule of law are the hallmarks of a functioning democracy. Selective law enforcement that discriminates against those with a moral, political, or social message gives more than a legal license to bullies to silence political opponents. It enables the roots of tyranny to grow and flourish. It's an excellent commentary by Dr. Charles Lugosi about what happened just recently. I'm going to take my musical break right now. I'm going to play a tune by a very talented blonde lady from Tulsa, Oklahoma. This is Becky Hobbs. This is a song called "Jones on the Jukebox," referring, of course, to No Cho Jones, George Jones, the legendary possum who passed away.
Canada's favorite cookie, delicious Cadbury.
There's a fool in the mirror, looking back across the bar. Reflections of a woman whose world just fell apart. Now the life we built together and the golden rings are gone. And it's twisty versus memories, and it looks like the race is on. I've
Overseas there? Yeah, that's how it works. See, you're watching TNN, I'm Shotgun Red.
Yeah, and here's another one by Becky Hobbs. I hope you'll really like it. This is I Don't Dance with Strangers. Very cute song. Becky Hobbs, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighty Side of Me here on LightResistanceRadio.com.
We got a good song to two-step to right now. Oh, yeah. The band is playing that old melody, and it brings back summer nights and good old Texas memories. And I came here to chase away my blues. Oh, and the last thing I expected was to meet someone like you. But I don't dance with strangers. It's a dangerous thing to do. I just came here to hear the band and have myself a drink or two. And you're tall, dark, and lonesome, and it's driving me insane. But I don't dance with strangers. Oh, honey, what's your name? Now listen, that my heart needs now is to take another chance. But what's the harm in once around the floor? Ooh, oh, and maybe later on we won't be strangers anymore. 'Cause I don't dance with strangers. It's a dangerous thing to do. Just came here to hear the band and have myself a drink or two. And you're tall, dark, and lonesome, and it's driving me insane. But I don't dance with strangers. So honey, what's your name?
Song by Mo Pitney and Rhonda Vincent, After the Fire is Gone. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
After the fire is gone. We're going to take a little break right
there's
now.
There's Jolene. Song called Jolene with Ron Vincent and the Rage and a little girl from the audience. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. This is a song, if it's the one I'm thinking of, once made very popular by Dolly Parton, Jolene. And
place. Well, we had a special, this is probably the most requested song of the day in two different ways. I met Jolene out here today, and so we want to do this for you. And there's a young lady, she said she wanted to come up and sing with us. So Faith, wherever you are, come on up here and sing this song with us. It's a one that we love, by one of, written by one of our favorite ladies, Miss Dolly Parton, one called Jolene.
Happening here.
I'm begging of you, please don't take my name. Jolene, 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 Jolene. Please don't take him even though you
can. I don't know why we are having so much trouble with the having our problems with the to down.
Your voice is soft like summer rain, and I cannot compete with you, Jolene.
From the audience.
Easy, take my name, but you don't know what it means to me. Let's hear it for Faith. How about that?
Jolene, Jolene, Jolene.
I'm begging of you, please don't take my name.
That's a really quite, yeah, quite. was Rhonda Vincent and Jolene from the audience. This is Paul Fromm. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated today in the morning, 4 in the afternoon, all of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. And this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I hope this one plays a little faster. We have really bad internet connection tonight. And this is Paul Fromm from the mountains of British Columbia on the fighting side of me. This is Paul Fromm, hoping we will eventually get the national anthem.